listening to the Global Product Management Talk, a regular broadcast for passionate product professionals and business people that don't get a chance to leave their desk and participate in product talks in person, so we bring product talks to you wherever you are. Every episode, we discuss different aspects of what it takes to produce successful products. Everyone is invited, including agile practitioners, user experience designers, content and community managers, business owners, CEOs, entrepreneurs, social media strategists, innovation managers, business analysts, project managers, product managers, program managers, product marketing managers, brand managers, software developers, and you, as well as everyone involved with the entire product lifecycle process from inception to sunsetting. Follow us on Blog Talk Radio. Go to www.blogtalkradio.com/prodmgmttalk. That's our website, www.prodmgmttalk.com. Follow us on Twitter at PRODMGMTTALK, and use the hashtag to tweet answers to the questions and follow the tweets, # PRODMGMTTALK. This is Cindy F. Solomon, your host for the Global Product Management Talk, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon and on the web, cindyfsolomon.com. Thank you to our platinum sponsor, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. Visit them on the web, www.aipmm.com. I'd also like to thank our new sponsor, TripAdvisor, the world's largest travel site, enabling travelers to plan and have the perfect trip. TripAdvisor offers trusted advice from real travelers and a wide variety of travel choices and planning features with seamless links to booking tools. Check them out at tripadvisor.com and also check out their career opportunities. While we have been around for a while, we act similar to a startup with weekly releases and a get stuff done mentality. You can email JRAMCHARAN at tripadvisor.com for product opportunities. And this episode of the Global Product Management Talk is brought to you by Sprint.ly. Don't ask how it's going, watch how it's going with Sprint.ly. You can find them on the web at sprint.ly. This is Cindy, delighted to be with you today on Monday, January 28th, the last Monday in January. A few things I want to tell you about before we get to our speakers, which is very exciting. We have a great lineup of speakers today. Over the weekend, I had the opportunity to attend the She's Geeky Unconference in Mountain View at the Computer History Museum. It was an unconference of women from STEM, which are the science, technology, math, and engineering. How could I forget that? Engineering. It was all these women in a room, and I go to technology conferences all the time. It was really delightful to be in a room with all women who are speaking about their experience, and just amazing. If you're a woman interested in technology or in technology, check out She's Geeky. Codechicks was there. I didn't realize that Google has a whole arm supporting women in technology. Groupon, Usenix, there were a lot of great organizations there supporting it. And I also got to talk about the upcoming conference, Startup Product Summit, that is coming up on February 7th. It's the first product conference not only for product managers, where you can discover how to work together to develop amazing products. Go to startupproduct.com to find out more about it. Registration is still open. If you want to come but have any issues preventing you to come, email me, cindy@startupproduct.com, and we'll find a way to get you there. And so it's very exciting today that we have two of our speakers on the line are going to be speaking at Startup Product Summit. I'm delighted. I've been trying to get them on the show for a while, and it's turned out that we have more than one speaker on the show today. I left out, prior to February 7th, the AIPMM, who is our platinum sponsor, has put together a three-day deep dive into product innovation leadership. They are providing on February 5th and 6th a two-day intensive that includes a credential, an exam, and pretty much an MBA in innovation frameworks, foundations, and methodologies to learn about strategy of innovation and to advance your career if you're already in a product position. So check out, go to the AIPMM under PDUs is the two-day intensive. Follow that through and you'll see information and the special pricing where they've put their training on February 5th and 6th right in front of the summit so you can sign up for all three at a special price. So today we are speaking with Vince Baskerville. He's a co-founder of Triplingo, and he's a product guy at Lithium Tech. He's an avid member of the tech community, founder for Atlanta User Experience Group, and an expecting father. I was worried that he might be have to run away from the show today. I don't know how close it is. He attempts to maintain an industry blog at vincentjordan.com. He ran 8bitfeed.com, and he's been working as a developer and designer for over a decade. He's known for crafting highly intuitive and engaging digital products, in addition to being an adrenaline junkie, which I think is a prerequisite if you want to work with startups. He's had the opportunity to work for the military, educational institutions, creative agencies, and startups. You can follow him on Twitter at WhoIsVince. Also, I'm delighted to have with us Guillaume DeCugis. And Guillaume, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. He's a co-founder. He's a co-founder and CEO of ScoopIt. That's scoop.it. It's the leading social media and curation publishing platform for professionals and businesses. When he founded ScoopIt in 2010, he wanted to create a social media platform that allows businesses to stand out in an increasingly crowded online world. Today, the company attracts more than 5 million small business enterprise and professional users monthly and growing. His previous company, MusicWave, became the leading mobile music service. And so I had previously discussed with Guillaume about spending the whole show talking about content issues and content marketing issues, and it's worked out that we're going to be talking about that in UX, and we also have Kelly Snow on the line with us. And Kelly is a senior interaction designer at Lithium Technologies. Kelly, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself as well as your Twitter handle, if you have one?
Sure. I have over 10 years' experience as a user experience designer, 15 years' experience in web-based applications and technologies, and I've primarily been working on enterprise applications, working analytics, reporting, sort of big data issues as well as data security. I'm currently working at Lithium Technologies.
Excellent. By the way, if you are out there tweeting, I have my hands full with the conversation today, so we'll try and circle back. But please do tweet using the pound sign PRODMGMTTALK. And if you are tweeting, I will read your tweets during the show. You're welcome to tweet questions to the speakers. And so, as I said, as a product manager myself, an entrepreneur and CEO, I have found in even for the Startup Product Summit coming up, that's a startup launch in and of itself. It requires more than having an idea. It definitely, we haven't had a UX person or a designer on the team, and that has been a great problem because I'm an idea and a content person. I care about the information and getting that information across. I'm not a visual person, and it's an obstacle because so much today on the web, it's such a great platform for visual ideas, but also the whole experience that someone has coming to a product, how they relate to it, how they interact to it, really needs to be determined before that product is launched. So why don't Vince and Guillaume, why don't you introduce yourselves and give your perspective and let's talk about at the inception of the product, because I see UX as key and I also see content marketing as key, because once you have a product, even a product idea, if you can't get the word out, it almost doesn't matter. So go ahead, Vince.
Right. Vincent, my name is Vincent, and right now I'm with Lithium Technologies along with Kelly and the co-founder of Triplingo, as you mentioned. Great intro of me, thank you. and like you said, so I mean, you know, the UX is key, all these different things is key. One of the cool and painful things in startups is that everything is key. No matter what it is, who you talk to, what conference you go to, everything's important. So if you're coming from a startup, every tiny little thing is important. And it's true. I mean, it is true. But at the same time, you need to understand that context matters. But from the UX point of view, it's you don't want to confuse design and UX, you know, the icing versus the actual product, you know, how to actually make it, what the innards are, and all that stuff. And that's kind of the angle of what I'm coming from, right? It's I love everything that goes into product, how it's done, and how it actually is going to make money. I never want to forget that part. I'm always about making money, right? And more so than about making a shiny product. But yes, I mean, that's my angle as far as coming from the UX side. I'm not sure if that helps.
Well, so I guess let's step back and let's explain what UX is, because I'm finding in my discussions with UX people that their experience working inside an organization on a team is somewhat similar to product managers. I don't want to say that we don't get respect, but it's more, I think, a matter of people don't understand what it is that we do. Similar to product managers, we're working cross-functionally. We need to get input, and we're trying to drive the product so it has what I call integrity, which means that it's meeting the users, the end users' needs, and it's delighting them. And engineers and other people on the team, they're not seeing the full perspective the way that I think that product managers and user experience designers uniquely have and have to have that cross-functional perspective.
Yeah, no, I mean, both product managers and user experience, all those, you know, these type of fields, the work that goes into these two different specific titles aren't, you know, it's not that old. People have been doing this for ages. These two title names themselves, though, are relatively new. And that's the issue right there. You know, a lot of people still seeing product managers are project managers. And so there's a lot of confusion there amongst larger companies. Same thing with user experience. It's a very popular term right now. So a lot of people are putting, you know, they're looking for these unicorns, I call them, because, you know, they'll put in the application, I want a user experience designer, but really they want, you know, maybe just a flash interface designer, or they want, you know, an action screen. They just want someone who's a designer, a graphical user interface designer. They don't want a UX person. UX is more research-based. So I'd love to get some more input from Kelly on this. But it's there are strong divides that separate a UXer and a designer. And Kelly, well, I mean, being a UXer at Lithium as well, one of the things that we're going to talk about today, being a UXer of one, what are some of the challenges, or positive too, I guess, as far as, you know, the differences of what's happening right now in a lot of companies, being a UXer, not understanding what that is?
Sure. I think it's very difficult to explain what user experience is, in part because people have different ideas of what that is, different job postings out there with different criteria. So it's hard to sort of converge on one strict definition. But an analogy that I like to use is often when you go to build a house, you have an architect, an engineer, and an interior designer. Your visual designer, to me, is more like the interior designer, putting the great look and polish on the house. And a user experience person is like the architect, coming up with the basic design and flow of the house, how you get from one room to the other. And then finally, you have your engineer, which I liken to, you know, as an engineering, software engineering architect who is building this out. So I hope that analogy helps in terms of expressing the different roles that can come together to build software. And the user experience person is really a dedicated role to advocating for a user in an organization that, you know, people sometimes are heads down in the engineering nuts and bolts or with product or customer issues. The end user sometimes gets forgotten, and so this role has emerged to evolve product, I think, towards a more user-friendly interface.
Yeah.
So that's my...
Go ahead.
I wanted to bring Guillaume in to give his perspective. So, Guillaume, do you have an engineering or programming background? Is that how you come to this?
Yeah, I'm an engineer. I'm not a UX person, but I'm an engineer now and an entrepreneur. And, I think what I can add to this discussion, I totally sympathize with the fact that UX is a hard sell. I mean, it took me a while for me to get what, the difference between UX and graphic design was. And it took me a while to understand. The problem is that, like a lot of more creative professions, you can talk to two different UX persons and they would make two different recommendations. So to me, as an engineer with a scientific mind, it sounds, 10 years ago, it sounded to me like bullshit. And it took me a while to understand. And it's not, I'm a big believer. And I learned UX the hard way. I can take you through my story. My first company was in the music business and on mobile. We were dealing with, enabling technology. So UX was not so important. We were the first company to ever do MP3 ringtones. So, when you have a first product like this, people will come to you no matter how crappy your mobile site was. And we did websites over WAP. So, there's no good UX you could build on that anyway. And so UX was not so important in my first company. And then when we started this company, we actually started a mobile app and we failed. And it took us 2 years to realize we were failing, and that's when we pivoted to Scoop.it. And part of the reasons we failed is we didn't understand UX. And so we learned the hard way. But the reason we didn't get it was that for people who are not in, an agency, who are not trained about UX, it's very difficult to understand. And one of the things that got me into that was actually the whole concept of the lean startup, this idea that you have to do iterations and you have to look, you have to start from the numbers. And I think, what got me into realizing I needed to completely change my approach on UX was things like conversion metrics, looking at what people did with my website or my mobile app, having a camera filming them. And when you bring a lot of facts and when you make the problem clear, then I think this is where you get the budget and we get a blank check, or whether you're an agency or you're an in-house designer, this is what makes people change their mind about it.
Right. I mean, what you're saying exactly is so true, especially, back in the day, it was mostly, a lot of focus was mostly just on usability itself. Can the product work? We just needed to work.
Yeah.
The web, early web days was just brutal, so no one was too worried about trying to make sure that the experience was pristine. It was like, can it work? I have this problem. I have this itch. It solves it. What do you mean? Like, can I make it solve it better? Like, it solves the problem. So, that was the focus, true. Whereas that's what's kind of coming up now is now the differentiator, I can't really say that word right, sorry, is the user experience, because people now have, there's tons of top talent engineers out there, tons of top different people who are help creating these amazing products, are solving problems. Now the separator is who solves it better, right?
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
What this whole, Yeah, and that's where this UX comes in. But there, you know, a lot of things is, if you don't talk to the person who understands user experience, they're going to get it mixed up. And user experience comes from a scientific background. And that's where someone like myself, I don't come from the very, you know, the scholastic research-based. I'm more of a, you know, I was a self-taught developer, and then I also was doing design, things like that. So that's kind of, I got into it from that route, coming from an agency, wanting to make sure my clients were making money, right? I was like, you know, no longer want to be a one-shot, you know, hey, let's do a design for you, pay us money, then go away. It was, how can we make sure that you're successful? I want our brand to be the one that proves, like, hey, you came to us and we did something for you, and then you saw a 20%, 25% uptick in revenue of us, you know, and that's how I found UX. And that's where it is. It's scientific, you know, it's researchers, it's human factor engineering, it's usability analysts, you know, tacking on UX on an application or something like that. It's a giant umbrella, and there's a plethora of different, you know, titles underneath it that make up that, you know, and that's the challenge, right? Like you were saying, like, if you're one person on a team, how can you make up 11 different people when, you know, you have your boss saying, I don't know what the hell this is. What are you talking about? You know, like, you know, show me some numbers. What does this mean? You know, all I wanted you to do was move this button over there. Why are you giving me a headache? You know?
I think you're right. You know, people need to be seeing that rationality, that the fact that this is not, you know, just you making a guess, but this is something where there's a rationale behind it, and you can actually measure the impact. And I think, you know, having that loop is actually the way to build credibility, as, you know, making those changes and saying, okay, this is the metric we want to improve, this is the rationale for making that change, and then measuring it up. I think that's the way to get people buying into that. And I also very much agree with that, you know, tough consumer web or even the enterprise now. You know, enterprise software used to be, you know, I started my career back more than 16 years ago, which kind of dates me now. You know, when you look at what SAP and, you know, enterprise software was 15 years ago, you said, well, people don't care because that's the enterprise. And if you look at Scoop.it now, we're a professional and business tool, but we have to be offering a strong UX, because there's been this consumerization of business software that's really important. So UX is now touching a lot of different aspects. So it's not so much that you could do enablers only. You have to be good at UX as well.
Yeah.
I wanted to actually just chime in really briefly. Someone had mentioned that there was a great point about, you know, as time has moved on, user experience has become more important in the product cycle. We had bad UI in the past, and it was tolerated by our users, and that bar is moving. I think at this point, companies, even if they don't understand what UX is, they are hiring that person. So I am seeing that, and have seen that in other companies, where they bring in UX, they know they need it, but they're still not sure what it is or how to integrate it into the process. So I think that's another challenge, is trying to connect all of this into the best product team possible. And I think that is still an obstacle for user experience professionals out there.
Yeah, and why I'm delighted to have you as an engineer on this discussion, Guillaume, is because often I find that the engineers, the UX, and the product managers are not in the same room at the same time, because we're speaking different languages. We have different goals for the product or how we're touching the product. And also, I've been finding in the startup world, specifically here in San Francisco, that UX people are getting hired as the product manager, and not seeing that there's more to product management than UX. Not to belittle UX at all, because it's key, but there's things that product managers do that maybe the CEO is now doing in the startup, but as the company, the product becomes more mature, that needs to be passed over to someone else who's thinking about positioning and strategy and entry points and market the competitive space and bigger pictures for the next place for the product to go, that really need to be thought of early on for the roadmap, but clearly it's not necessarily possible to do too early on.
Right. No, you hit it right there as well. I think I'm sure most of the listeners, they know about pragmatic marketing and the pragmatic marketing framework, right? I was saying earlier how product management is a new term, just as, you know, relatively new as UX. And so the framework that pragmatic marketing has, it lists all these strategic and you know, these 30,000 foot views, and then all in the trenches type views of tasks and different things you can focus on, whether it's market definition all the way down to the channel support. And it's the PM is supposed to be doing all of this. But then, you know, they say that you can split this up as a product marketer, product manager, and then the product owner, all these different roles. You know, if you're in a startup, this is split. Either you're doing this or the CEO is doing this. It's split between you and the CEO. I mean, like, you know, how it's being split up all the way to enterprise level where this may be 40 different people, you know. And so there's confusion on that as well. So it's like, you know, you may go to a company and they're like, hey, along with being, you know, you're the PM, but I want you to do UX as well. You got that, right? All right, cool, bye. You know, because it's not really understanding that it's a title where it brings a ton of things under that umbrella. You know, it's exciting. Most of the people who fall under the UX or PM world, most I've been experiencing, you know, are type A personalities. And so, you know, we love it. I know me for myself, I love it. I love being able to put my hands in multiple different things. You know, I was saying earlier how I was a self-taught developer. You know, I love being able to touch development, touch design, touch research, touch this, do that, marketing, like just be everywhere at once, you know. So I like the being pulled everywhere. So I get off on that. But to someone else, they want a more focused role, and that's a challenge, right? You know, it's because PM, there's a million different things.
So you gave me, speaking about product management being in its infancy, the AI PMM, who's a big sponsor of this show and of the Startup Product Talks, they're coming out with the ProdBoc, which is a product management body of knowledge, which is a cross vendor. It's basically a over 60 consultants, trainings, and other product management educators have contributed to this body of knowledge, which there hasn't existed previously in product management. Although if you speak to seasoned product managers, everyone comes out with their own framework. And so Pragmatic is one of them. But the ProdBoc, the AIPMM, has put together a product lifecycle framework, which pretty much parallels the creative process of, let's get everyone on the same page. Instead of dividing people up by their expertise or their titles, which may not be relevant to all size organizations, let's have a conversation focused on what does a product need at every point in its lifecycle? What do you need to do to get a product designed, to get the product out the door? What do you need to build the product? Where does Agile fall into it? And what happens after the launch? What happened? Nobody ever wants to talk about failing or sunsetting or killing the product so you don't cannibalize your other products. And I heard a great discussion recently. It might have been on Twit Talks about how the small iPad is cannibalizing Apple's own notebook sales, earbook sales. So the AIPMM framework, of which, of course, I'm an advocate for and I've contributed to, gives a framework of, let's not talk specific vendors or specific frameworks, but let's have a context so they all fit in, and so we can all be having the same conversation about what the product needs at this point of time and what's it going to take to facilitate it getting through the next milestone. So thanks for, and we are on the half hour, so this is my opportunity to tell you you're listening to the Global Product Management Talk, and we're talking today with Vince Baskerville, Baskerville, who's a co-founder at Triplingo, which is a very cool mobile app that does translations. We're talking with Guillaume, who is his co-founder and CEO of Scoop It, and I hope you can get some more points in, Guillaume, because it really is sometimes in the conversations I have with non-engineers and other people who are dealing with the product, you know, an issue that we face a lot is especially, again, you know, my background is software, online web, and by the way, Guillaume, I do go back to the WAP. I was in an early mobile startup way too early. But my point is that sometimes, you know, engineers become the bad guys for us who want to drive the product beyond a purely technological thinking, that we're thinking about the market, and the market, you know, cares about how the product is solving their problem, more about the features. But when non-engineers come into an engineering-driven company, it's really hard because we have to almost change the culture, almost change your perspective, and it's not easy to do. And it's interesting to me that I used to think, because I've been involved in this stuff for so long, I used to think, oh, it was because I was a woman that my point of view wasn't being respected. And so I'm so delighted that so many of these points of views, it has nothing to do with having a female perspective. It has to do with I wasn't talking engineering speak.
Yeah. So you know, I think it's we're touching on culture, and I think it's actually very hard to evolve a culture of an engineering team or a technology company once it's created, and that's why it's so important for startups to you know start this culture very early on, and that's something also I discovered. Like I think you know again looking at comparing two examples, you know, Scoop It and my previous company, MusiWave. So MusiWave was our model was to actually build those music platforms for mobile carriers. So we weren't a B2C company. We built B2C services that had the operator's brand, and so we had all of those enabler cultures. So we were very much engineering driven, and I kind of you know when we looked at B2C opportunity, before we got acquired by Microsoft, we looked at doing some cloud music streaming services, you know, which eventually became, you know, this is what Spotify got, but we were in that same train of thoughts. And I found it impossible to get an organization that was led by engineers with B2B customers to think out of the box back to becoming innovative in that specifically talking about those UX challenges. So what we had to do was to actually create a kind of like startup within the startup. We were already a 200 people company back then, so it was already too big for us to change that culture. So we said, okay, we're going to create a group of three people, one engineer, one product management guy, and one UX guy, and you know give them a blank check, you know, work against objectives, and to create something pretty cool. And then we got acquired, so that you know it's a different story back then. But I think you know where we got lucky on Scoop It is that from day one we had a team where the engineers were convinced that they had to work with UX, and because they were also users of the product, they didn't build something for somebody else to use, but they felt very deeply about the problem we were trying to solve, which was you know how do you help people become media online, use social media better, and you know find it better to create their you know online presence with curation. So they felt as they would be users of the platform, and it's true they're all using the product, and so it helps a lot of things because they realize when something sucks on the UX, they realize that it's actually a science. They realize that it takes some expertise for somebody to fix that, and that their ideas don't always work. But you have to create that very early on for that culture to work.
Kelly.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us what you do at Lithium, and I see that I'm looking at your LinkedIn, so I see that your career has been quite focused on the web and UX. So that's that's quite fortunate that you've been able to maintain that course.
Well, I think I'm fortunate to live in the Bay Area, actually, and that's I've had that opportunity. There seems to be more opportunity here than perhaps other regions to focus on UX. But I actually started out as a web producer, and I have evolved into this role, and eventually got formal education by going to a graduate program. But I think that what happens in general with some of these product management roles and UX roles and related is we all have to wear many hats, and that's sort of a common thread that I see, as well as adapt and move into whatever the next sort of whatever the market is demanding, and have evolved in that way. But you're right, it has been somewhat focused, although I do feel that I fill in for product management because they're often overwhelmed and have great number of responsibilities, and so I have a partnership with the product managers I work with here, and pick up in some of those areas. So that's how that's my current capacity, and that's what I see at a startup. You know, people have to wear many roles or many hats in general, that's part of the environment. I've also worked in larger organizations where the roles are more strictly defined, and you know, at the Ciscos of the world, for example. So it kind of I'm seeing differences within the UX role itself, depending on the kind of organization that you're in.
But it certainly.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say. I mean, one of the things to speak about Lithium too, and not for loss in translation reasons. I'm at Lithium right now as a product manager, and one of the things I love about Lithium, and the reasons why you know I kind of accepted the position from stepping down is their acceptance of the project owner and project management role, how they do that. You know, things are really split up into either strong verticals, or very specific horizontals, and they allow the PMs to really run it. You know, right? And then it's not a perfect understanding of UX. You know, we're getting there, but as far as one of the larger organizations. You know, Lithium, I think, has almost 200 people now. I've only been there about 2 months. Like, the culture is amazing. The understanding and acceptance of UX and the acceptance to be taught what it means, right? That's the first key, is to be the willingness to understand it. When, you know, it's different when people don't understand it and don't want to understand it versus they may not fully get it, yet they want to know more about it. And I may be young, naive in the organization, but that's my viewpoint on Lithium. So I'm really excited to be there. Really excited about how things are being handled. And although me and Kelly aren't on the same team, we do cross chat, and we have, you know, like weekly, biweekly, different things set up so we can communicate and be able to work through this. And so I think she's doing amazing things there, and I'm really excited of what's happening.
Yeah, I just want to add, I think part of, I've been there a little bit longer than Vince, and this is not specific to Lithium, but in every organization I've been in, it's critical to identify the people within the organization who advocate for user experience. And I tend to seek those people out and build relationships and try and drive the culture in a way from getting a bigger voice for user experience when you're often the only person in a room of 5 or 8 engineers. You know, a lot of things are consensus driven, and if you're the only advocate, it could be really challenging. And so you need allies, you know, elsewhere in the organization that don't have the UX title. And I think that's been pretty key in terms of trying to move forward with some of our design philosophy, and trying to even establish a design philosophy that people, other engineers, can carry forward. We're always understaffed. We always will be. How do we scale good user experience? You know, and identifying those people that can advocate for you, but also implement in that way with a different mindset than maybe they had before.
Mm-hmm. One of the cool things I wanted to kind of plug too, it's not mine, I get no kickback off of this, but There's an awesome, awesome book. I think, you know, PMs, UXers, whoever you are, if this world represents, right? You may have, Cindy, you may have heard of this book. What's it? Undercover User Experience. Have you heard of that book?
I'm not familiar. It's not on my bookshelf, so.
It's a short read, and it's great. Like, it's kind of deceiving about how short it is, and I don't remember the writers, and I think New Writers is the publisher. I don't know. I highly recommend, like I said, you know, because to me it kind of helps teach people how to attack from an organizational point of view, regardless if you're a 3-person team up to a 2,000 person company. It kind of gives you laser specific focus on how to attack different things to get, you know, and the book's mostly talking about user experience. Regardless, right? You know, if you're PM and you need to understand, you're trying to help influence, do different things, this is how you do it. And I love it. It's just, you know, it's a manual that we all need to have, and it's a straight brilliance. It's co-written by these two guys, and I really should pull their names up.
So I have them. It's at undercoverux.com, and it's written by Sunny Bowles and James Box, and it looks like they're coming out of the UK. And it has a manifesto, which is interesting, because I've been thinking, should we have a manifesto for startup product collaboration teams? Whenever I bring up manifestos, people give me a lot of kickback. I had done a research of all the manifestos that exist in the software world, and it was quite fascinating. This is great. Undercover User Experience Design at undercoverux.com. It looks really great. So the other thing that when I think about UX and the methodology, the tools that you use, it's for the front end design of the product, but it's also a very marketing focused approach, because you're taking feedback from the market to improve the experience of using the product. And so, Guillaume, in your product about Scoop It to which is under content marketing, also putting content and marketing together is a new term, and I see professionals focused on this, and it's actually a title. So you're also, your product is focused on really the user experience of the content, and enabling that content to get out and making it easier for people like me to get the word out about what we're doing.
Yeah, so it's actually an interesting example, because we're solving a problem that, if you look at it from a pure engineering point of view or pure scientific point of view, was, you know, already solved, which is, how do you create an online magazine or a media? And of course, you know, blogging already existed when we started, and, you know, it's already been possible even before blogs to actually create a personal page or to put some content online on the internet. So we're typically a platform that deals not with, you know, huge technology enhancements or enablement, but with dealing with the what was blocking people from actually doing that. And what we saw when we started back 2 years ago was that even our team, even of the founders, we felt, hey, we're techie people. We love social media. We're on Facebook. We're on LinkedIn. But we don't have a blog. And why is that? You know, we felt, well, the thing is, maintaining a blog and maintaining or a podcast, as you're doing, is a lot of work. You have to create content. You have to be constantly promoting it. And we felt a lot of people don't have the time or can't justify the investment to do that. And it's a shame, because when you're successful with, you know, becoming an online media, be it a blog or a YouTube channel or a podcast, it's a great marketing. It's actually free media. It's like free advertising. And that's why, you know, there's this thing that content marketing, which is the ability to become a media and create or distribute interesting content and have people, you know, look at it, is a new form of advertising. And it's really powerful because if you, you know, as the audience also become more sophisticated, they're interested in following the people who bring a lot of the best value and provide that filtering with all of the information that we receive. So so we focused on solving that problem, which is fundamentally a UX problem, which is we brought in two couple of ideas in that, which is one, let's focus on making people curators of content as opposed to becoming creators. We felt a lot of people are better at curating content than they are at creating content. And the second idea was to use a topic-centric model where you can be discovered for what you're good at, for a topic of expertise. But the rest is UX. You know, you could say everything you do on Scoop.it is something you could do on WordPress, for instance. The thing is we're making it so much easier that we're now enabling millions of people to discover or publish under that model. And that's really what's been driving our growth. We've been growing 15-30% a month. And all of the, and this links back to the beginning of the discussion, which is the decisions we're trying to make are really around, is that going to make it easier? Is that going to having an impact? Can we measure that? So all of the UX decisions we're making are tied to, are we helping the majority of our users, so professionals and businesses, becoming better and better publishers online with this?
Excellent.
So and the awesomeness of startup competition, I love it. There's a particular awesome Atlanta company who's Informed. I'm an advisor on the company, and very similar things that what you guys are doing at Scoop.it. So I love to see. You know, I'm looking forward to meeting you, Green, at in a couple of weeks, and see what you guys are doing too. That's cool.
Yeah, cool. You're going to be at the summit as well, right? So
So if you go to startupproduct.com, you'll see the lineup of speakers. Although, as I said earlier, the whole team, we're doing this summit as a startup launch ourselves. So we continue to iterate, and we've discovered who needs to be on the team. So Vince is speaking in the early on, at the beginning in the morning, where everyone, all the speakers are doing lightning talks, followed by a question and answer, and followed by a group discussion. And it's really, it is a summit in that it's going to be not a very intimate setting where we're all talking together. And I'll tell you, the people who are coming as participants are experts themselves. It's very exciting. So this is all what I call thought leaders in the room. So we can go pretty deep into this subject matter, which we talk about every month at Startup Product Talks Meetup at Atlassian. That's at sfproducttalks.com. And we found that, you know, an hour, 2 hours is not enough, because after we warm up in the discussion, nobody wants to go home. We want to keep talking. And people are coming to those meetups after a full day, 8-10 hours of already working on their product. So that's why we decided to take a day to get everyone in the room and let's go deep. And the focus is not necessarily on culture or philosophy. We're not calling that out anywhere. But of course, if we're going to try and arrive at something of a context or something that comes out of this for what are the next steps or where to go or what can we provide to make it easier for other people to forward the conversation or to have people stand on our shoulders. It will be very interesting to see what we come up with as a group. So Vince is talking in the first group of speakers about design thinking and rapid prototyping. Jonathan Smiley from Zurb, which is a design agency, Purnima, who's the founder of Femgineer, and Mickey Settler from Evernote are also speaking. Then following that, we're talking about road mapping and execution. It might be after lunch. And Joe Stump, who founded Sprintly, which is a project management tool for managing the software build, but for product managers and everyone else in the organization to see where the product is in a point of time. Solomon Hikes from .cloud, thanks for letting me talk more about it. Michelle Sun from Spotic, Nick Muldoon, who used to be with Atlassian and is now with Twitter. And then we're talking about marketing and getting traction, where Guillaume will be doing a lightning talk. Leo from Buffer, Eric from Twyla, Maria from Xanadu Mobile, who's talking about getting traction around mobile issues, and James Sims from LaunchRock. So very exciting lineup. Go to startupproduct.com. The agenda is posted. The blog will be posting why the different perspectives on what this summit is about and the different people that should be coming to join this conversation. So thanks again. If you want to attend and you have any issues, you can email me, cindy@startupproduct.com. And so this conversation today was meant to be a little teaser of the kind of stuff that we'll go into. And we really have only touched the surface. Vince had suggested 6 questions. I think maybe we touched upon one. And Guillaume, definitely I want you to come back and we'll spend the whole time talking about content marketing, because we haven't even gotten into that at all. And I'm quite passionate about it. And the more I use Scoop It, the more excited I get about how powerful it is.
So, that's good to hear, and I'll be back anytime. So
yeah.
Just let me know.
So, as last words, we still have time. I didn't do a shout out to invite people to call in. If you want to call in, it's 323-927-2957. If you want to call in and ask questions, we do have quite a bit of live listeners. I'm finding that, this started as a Twitter chat, and it's very hard to get busy people to stay on a Twitter chat for an hour. It moved into a broadcast because I would be talking to the speakers and trying to tweet what they were saying, and it's become clear and clear to me that no matter how fast I can type, I just don't have the brain power to tweet and speak simultaneously.
It's tough.
Yeah, and what's exciting about being able to do the broadcast is that, people are listening live, but we're talking about a lot of stuff that needs to be digested. And so people will listen to it on demand. And by the way, this is available on iTunes. I created the mobile app for Android because that was the easiest marketplace to get it into. And it's syndicated on Stitcher. Any mobile app, you could pull up PODMGMTTALK. And get the blog, also including Blog Talk Radio. You can get all the archives going back. So do you have any, I guess it's unfair to say, but any summarizing thoughts or even the opportunity to open a conversation offline? I'd like to give each of you the opportunity to also give your contact information for people to reach you either on Twitter or on other social media.
So I thought this was great. Thank you again, Cindy, for inviting me here. This is great. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. This is awesome. The best place to really reach me on Twitter, Who Is Vince, is my handle. Best place to touch. For me, I thought what the kind of wrap up for what this was kind of a mix of being a UXer of one type deal and then owning the content and the management and the marketing side of it. But some of the things I would probably say is that you're not alone, right? Regardless of what your position is, what your title is in a startup or in a large organization, you may feel isolated, but you're definitely not alone in that situation. The best thing to do is to participate in other things like this. Go talk to people at meetups, see how other people are handling it, and really just read, and try to figure out how to branch out and how to grow. That's really the best thing that I think how this really went. And yeah, again, quick shout out to Lithium, great social stack solutions over there, Triplingo. company co-founded, Language Learning, and Informed, nfmd.com. They're a content aggregator that I'm helping being a contributor and advisor for. So thank you again.
Great. Kelly, we'll have to have you back also to have you talk some more, and I really appreciate you jumping on today.
Well, thanks for including me. It was great. Really great discussion, and of course, I love talking about user experience.
Great. So we'll have you back to talk about being whatever you want to talk about. I'll send you the speaker form, and I'll get you on the schedule. The schedule's gotten a little confused with scheduling everyone, but I do this every Monday at this time. And I broadcast live out of studio132.com with BZ Lewis. I'm here in the Oakland Hills, Kelly, so you can actually come into the studio to be here in person with me.
That'd be great. I would love that.
We keep promising to have someone come in live. Guillaume, we'll have to get you over the bridge to come in also. So, Guillaume.
I can do that.
Great, yeah. I passed Emeryville on my way here. Guillaume, any closing points you'd like to give?
Maybe I was thinking, you know, we've discussed about this cultural challenge. I mean, and Kelly talked about being the only UX designer in a room full of engineers. You know, something that, you know, if you're in a culture that respects UX design, then it's great. But if you're not, maybe, you know, a few advice that worked for me. You know, again, I was touching on that before, but the framework of the Lean Startup really helped us a lot getting to get that UX culture in what we're doing. And I think it applies in bigger companies, so don't be afraid of reading that if you're in a Fortune 500 company. But the Lean Startup is basically about fast iteration and experimenting and you know, having rapid cycles. And not investing, you know, a 6 month project before you know what you're doing. If you can validate some assumptions in a few weeks, then that's a lot better. And I think it works great with UX specific issues because, as Kelly pointed out, you're never gonna have consensus if you're a different UX person and you have 10 engineers facing you. But what you might have is a consensus on, hey, let's try this. Let's do an experiment and let's see whether this assumption is actually a valid one. And so if you have either the 10 engineers wanting to do something and you disagree, you know, have them try it. And maybe it's a shorter project that can be tried in 2 weeks. Or if you have, you know, the opposite, which is, you know, something you want to bring, which can be experimented in 1 or 2 weeks, that the other guys don't want to do, then, you know, showing them that you move the needle and you have some KPIs you're improving with this, I think is a great way of driving the culture towards more UX and more results. And it works for us a lot. And that's how that was something we started to do as we pivoted from this other mobile project to Scoop It back 2 years ago. And so I would encourage people to look at it this way. That would be my closing comments. And if you want to engage with me, Guillaume at Scoopit is my email address, so GUILLAUME, or on Twitter, at GDECUGIS.
Thank you so much, and thank you to our sponsors, the AIPMM, at AIPMM, www.aipmm.com, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, that provides training and credentials in product management, product marketing, innovation management, and brand management. Definitely check them out and subscribe to their newsletter. Thank you again to Sprintly at Sprintly, sprint.ly, project management software, bringing the entire corporation to the software development process by showing managers and non-engineers a top-level view of what the programmers are doing. Thank you to TripAdvisor, and definitely check out their product teams and their product position opportunities at TripAdvisor. And at Startup Product, February 7th, come and engage in these kinds of conversations in person. very exciting. We want you to be there, and contact me if you want to be on the team so you can be in the room. I'll put you to work. We're launching a product. Thanks so much. This has been Cindy F. Solomon. You've been listening to the Global Product Management Talk on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're a top 10 business podcast. Contact me to sponsor and to produce other shows. Coming up next week, we are talking with Maria, who is also speaking at the Startup Product Summit, talking about gaining traction for your mobile applications. And also this Friday in the AI PMM webinar series, Joe Stump of Sprintly is talking about how to increase the speed of your product efforts. And I think he might be doing a demo, but we're talking about all of the obstacles to the product getting out on time and with ease. So join me on the webinar on Friday morning, and thank you for your time, everyone. Check out sfproducttalks.com. Thank you, Guillaume, for jumping in and being willing to be flexible. Thank you, Vince.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Vince, for also jumping in, even though you may not be feeling well and you have a baby being launched very shortly.
Indeed.
And thank you. Thank you, Kelly, for joining. Very nice to meet you. Have a great week, everyone.
You as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks to our live listeners and our tweeters, who I will see you offline. Have a great week. Our intro theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com and the great Mark Blasco. We are broadcasting live from studio132.com. Join us in person for lively discussions and great networking with product professionals at Startup Product Talks San Francisco Monthly. Go to sfproducttalks.com to find out more. Discover how to work together to develop amazing products. Startup Product Summit, February 7th, 2013. StartupProduct.com.